Kia ora, tā alofa, hi, and welcome to another episode of Tanarumanga's Team Talk, proudly sponsored by Victual, New Zealand's first health and wellbeing supplement range that combines ancient Māori and Pacifica wisdom and ingredients. And my guest tonight on our show is an Ōtara scorpion and Otahuhu leopard stalwart. He represented the Junior Kiwis rugby league team with yours truly in 1992. I don't think we're as big a midfield pairing back then as we probably would have made later on in life, but it was good times. And then he made his first grade debut in 1993 for the Canberra Raiders, where he obviously levelled up in terms of his midfield partnership in the centres there with the great Mal Meninga, and was able to win a premiership with the Canberra Raiders the same year. And there were some greats in that team too. We'll talk about them because some of my heroes and role models were in that team. In 2002 and 2003, he was named the Canberra Raiders Player of the Year. And then my guest joined the New Zealand Warriors 2005. And was the first New Zealander to reach 300 first-grade NRL games. He was selected for the Kiwis in 1994 and played 55 test caps for them, and that's still the most by any player before retiring in 2006, and he captained the Kiwis 18 times. He was appointed an Officer of the New Zealand Order of Merit for services to rugby league in 2007, and he started his own gym, WikiWorks, with wife Santa, once he finished his time as a rugby league player, but he still keeps his hand in it. As you see, when he first came out, he was running behind the Warriors there as one of the high-performance trainers. And we'll talk about that because I always wondered what the role is. It's like you're nearly going to put on a jersey, you guys, back there. But it's a huge honour to have on the show tonight, Ruben Wiki. Tuli, thank you very much for your time. It's always a pleasure to catch up.
Malo, lava lesu fua, malo. Mawa male langi mama, with two light yatu iliaba, male alo te lei, ma tau te fatalo fatu paia, male mama lo le aso, yalofo mai le atua, fatasi mai, ma fese suane mai, awa le tatu mafutanga le ne aso, malo le tautia, malo le sufua, malo le sufua manuia. Te lavo so, it's honor to catch up and have a talano with you, bro. It's, you know, long time between drinks, but we do have some history, bro. But it's been a hell of a journey. But we'll get on to that, no doubt.
Yeah, I'm sure. Hey, look, we've got to talk about remembering those times, and I just saw a photo of our junior Kiwi team yesterday, actually. Barry, did you see that? Barry Fuel's birthday yesterday. And Tane Manahira from Christchurch back to Canterbury back then, you know, he put that up and, geez, I was tall back then.
So now you're tall as. Oh, the lanky, lean guy with the short hair. Sort of.
That's it.
And, some good times, bro. And, you know, you kind of cherish those days. And every time the photo pops up, you kind of just reminisce and think about what we did, you know, the history we made. And watching Lethal Weapon and picking the word to the big brute ones, you know.
Yeah.
But it keeps us connected. And, you know, everyone's been on a different journey. And, you know, the rest is kind of history, huh?
Yeah, that's right. I think that's probably the thing. When you look back, it's just the different paths that everyone that took, you know. And, you know, it's just one of those things. And where you end up is something to, you know, like we're doing now is just to catch up upon. And I still remember we played each other, you know, in the under-19s. When Wainui came up to play you guys.
That's right, the 21s.
The 21s, we came up.
Yeah.
And then when we, I think it was it in Wairu Army Camp? That's where we had our under-19s camp.
Yeah. Yeah.
And do you remember? I remember, I never forget it, eh? We made the tournament team. And then do you remember that one of the guys, one of us, two guys, a forward and a back, were always selected to go to the Brisbane Broncos.
You're a Willy.
Yeah. Yeah. And then both of us didn't go. We ended up, I came back to rugby the next year, and I think Willie had something else on. But I remember, when it was named, we were in the mess hall, our fullback, he's an honest guy. The Wellington fullback came up to me, and he goes to me straight up, goes, "You shouldn't have got it, man. Ruben should have got it." I can't remember. He's from St. George. His name was Dave. Marist Northern, I think. But he says, thanks, bro. but I agreed with him. I says, I don't know why I got that.
There was another guy, Jermaine McDonald. I think he played for Canterbury. And he was in the centres. I said, that should be my position. I said, okay. No worries. That's who it is. This was down the track too.
Yeah.
And I said, that should be me, partnering up with Tana. I said, sorry, mate, but they chose me, not you.
Don't come at me, man. We don't pick ourselves.
I reckon it was they come at me with your long white on under tip.
Oh yeah. And so when you went to Canberra, obviously the next year, because back then it was because you'd played really well in the Pacific Cup. You played in the Pacific
Cup. Yeah. I was playing for the Maoris also
at the end of 92.
Yep, 92, mm-hmm. And then there was a few scouts that came over. Mm. So Tim Sheens and Dean Lance came over and scouted. So Peter Solis put my name forward because he was the coach for the Australian Schoolboys earlier in that year. And they came over and, come to look for some players. And they ended up picking up Noah, Ndruku, Johnny Lomax, Quinton Pongia, and myself. And Jimmy Vaikoso as well. So, they pulled me aside after one of the Kailongas and said, interested in getting you over. I said, oh my gosh, it's Canberraiders, or it's Tim Sheens, Dean Lance. And I was like, go home and have a bit of a done and all with mum, because I've never left mum's side. And, I discussed that with her. She was a bit, weary of the big move to Australia. We had the meeting with Tim Sheens at his hotel, and Santa came as well. So, it was a gamble I wanted to take. Mm. I was only a 2-year contract, so, I was going to go over there and play some 21s and see how I go. And I asked Santa to come over with me. So we were just, started going out, so... She came over, my brother came over, and, we tried our venture there for 2 years and kind of flourished after that.
Mm.
Yeah, I was supposed to come home, but things changed also.
Yeah, well, that's what happens, eh? As you said, you had the idea of, start down in the lower grades and work my way up, but the very next year, pretty much, 1 year there, and then the next year you're in the top side and things happen. No, you don't pick yourself, it's just through your actions
absolutely. Also, and I was because Canberra is in wintertime, it's sort of smart. freaking hell. It's like, I'm coming over there with like shorts, ankle socks, singlet, and I'm running around with the big boys and trying not to be that dude. Freezing, and all these guys got layers on, long socks, trying to be tough as. That's, oh my gosh, nearly like bloody hypothermia. But lots of challenges. Also, didn't know anybody. The guys over there were supposed to be 21 players. They looked like men. So how the Australians look way more mature than us Polynesians, come over there, not hairy, baby oil legs, and these guys are hairy ass, mustaches. I said, hey, what's going on here? But it was a challenge in itself, but playing 21s there. Craig Bellamy was the coach. The great Craig Bellamy, he was the coach for the 21s at got to learn the infamous spray,
As you started back then?
Oh, way back then, sorry. Way back then. you know, and just like, man, you know, when I got my opportunity to play with the run-on side, I was like number 54 on my back.
Mm.
They, you know, they're big numbers back then. And I ran on against the Balmain Tigers, sort of, and man, I was keen as mustard. And funny thing, the centre partner was Michael Maguire, the Rabbitohs coach.
Oh, yeah.
Totally. It's like, hey, you know, so, yeah, so all the, like, journeys later on, you talk about the opportunities and what the pass he crossed in. You know, he was my centre partner. I was, you know, I was keen. I was tackling everything and, you know, next minute, got sent from the field 10 minutes in. That was my introduction to the run-on side. You know, Tim Sheens bought the team early to come watch.
Yeah.
So Mel and Laurie and all of the boys watched me play. And Mel told Tim, he said, oh, yeah, goodbye that one. He only lasted 10 minutes, you know. So that was my first introduction to judiciary in 93 or so.
Oh, yeah. Geez.
Crazy stories, bro.
Oh, I can imagine. And how was that? You know, like you say, we said, you know, you're playing with some of the greats, Mal Meninga, you know, that's some of the immortals, and Laurie Daly and, you know, and Ricky Stewart now. But my favourite, Bradley Clyde, he was my favourite player.
Unbelievable.
I always saw myself as a loose forward, like, you know,
you sort of had that. You had that lean about you. Playing junior Kiwis. I'd be a lock.
I thought I was a lock there. When I didn't know you're in the centres. What was this? Oh, your work rate. It's not high.
You can put on effort.
Yeah.
Must be back there before the wingers start.
Exactly. So. Sorry, mate. I try to be low, but no, it wasn't fit enough. But how was that?
Honestly, also, it's like when I first met them, I was overwhelmed, but I just, you know, kept my cool and try to find my place in the club. So it was hard. I ended up playing one game in first grade and in 93 on the wing. And it was myself and Kenny Nagus. So it was a kind of debut. And shucks, so we played Newcastle, down in Newcastle. I was on the wing. And Andrew Johns is like bombing galore. So you know, just close my eyes and just, you know, good luck. I grab the ball. You know, the winger ends back in the back home days, those kind of change you. When you're in here and you get fun. So, but, you know, we lost that game, but, man, it was the pace of the game. I thought the 21s comp was fast, fully, but the level just went up another notch.
Yeah.
Reserve grade and then first grade, because back then in those days, if you played well enough, you could go sit on the bench for reserve grade. If you played well enough, you could go sit on the bench for first grade. And, you know, some of you could be playing like, 3 games in one day. But it was the mission, and to do what I could and to try and get a cement a first grade spot. So yeah, so 94, there was a few injuries and I took my opportunity, and you know, I was taking out all the other centers at training, you know. That was my mentality. It was, you know, train like you play. Yeah, take you out, and they got no one else to pick. And that was the last on the list, only, so they picked me. And I never looked back after that. I didn't want to give it away. I was still raw, you know, in regards to the standards they set in that team. Oh, my gosh, you know, the perfect pass. So you just imagine passing the ball from dummy half to Ricky Stewart, and if you don't get it right, oh, mate. So you've seen it how you... You know, how passionate he is with the Raiders. So this guy was the same at training. All of them were. And it was, oh, man. And I had to kind of bite my pride and don't take it personal. And I think that was the challenge for myself to excel in this game.
Yeah.
And in that team, is to take it on board. And, you know, it's not a personal dig at you. It's to make you better. So, I had a lot of those battles.
I can imagine, and you know, especially as a young man, you know, you've been through it as well on both sides, being the young and then being the older statesman. And you know, as you said, you've got to bite your pride because you know, your first was okay.
Yes, yeah.
Um, But you kind of, how long does it take, do you think, when you actually figure out that actually he wants me to be better? But, you know,
It probably dawned on me that if I don't start speaking up now, I'm just going to be, you know, a speed hump just on the road, you know, kind of thing. And Brett Mullins had a shot at me, you know, was just yelling at me all the time at training. And so why is this dude picking on me? You know? And their culture over there is, you know, with drinking and stuff is, it's right up there, you know. And so see this guy on a Wednesday, lunchtime, on their day off at a pub. And I'm walking past with Santa, and he goes, "Hey, come and have a drink." I said, "Hell no, I'm not coming in for a drink." So I didn't want their peer pressure to follow the lead, you know. And that turned. But he started just picking on me at training, like just yelling at me. So I kind of just whispered in his ear and just said, "You know, if you just keep yelling at me, I'm going to knock you out, bro." And then it stopped after that.
Yeah, yeah.
So then I found my, you know, found my way in there, you know, I just got to speak up. And, you know, they're pretty upfront and, you know, out there, you know, and they want you to bite back. So, you know, to earn your respect. And I did. And I kind of let my actions kind of speak after that. And as I said, you know, when I train, I try and take them all up. I always warn them pre-season. I said, "I'm just going to apologize now if I take you out when they're training and you don't get up. Sorry, but I want my position."
Yeah, you know? It's nothing personal.
Yeah, nothing personal. Yeah, it's nothing. Don't take it to heart.
But that's the thing too. Like it's now it's probably called bullying now and nowadays. Yeah. You're right. It's if you don't, they're waiting for, you know, they want to see if you're willing to fight for yourself or you're just going to let people, like you said, be a speed bump, you know, and they want people to speak up. But as soon as you do, you know, and you show them and you let your actions, but just say, "Hey, that's enough, Ben."
And I think, you know, being Polynesian Māori and you respect your elders, you know, and these guys are all older than me. And but the culture is totally different to where I grew up, you know, you have to respect the elders and don't talk back. But for me to survive, I had to, you know, so I had to, stand my authority down. And I'm here for a long time, not a short time, you know. And you would have had your journey to the rugby career also, and the senior players and where you sit on in the chain and in the bus, you know, those types of things. Yeah, sort of. But a massive learning for me, bro, it was huge for me to mature and to become a player that they pick every day, like every week, you know. So I had to, you know, learn the trade.
Yeah, and earn that too. But you're right, and you know, like to those days, again back, you know, you had to earn the right to sit on the bench.
Yes,
you earned the right to sit on the bench of the reserves, and then you know you go well, you could get, and then you earn the right to sit on the bench for all in the same day. You know, and that's what you look forward to. You know, you're working your way up, and again, you know, because of the way, you know, the game's gone and things, players can't do that anymore. You know, they don't want players playing that many games in a day, or which is understandable. But it was just a different time, you know, and that's how you had to work your way up. You just got to keep
It's grinding us. Keep grinding, bro.
And then, but also, like, there's a time and place for our cultures too, in terms of we respect our elders. But in the workplace, I'll come here just like you, like anyone else. My culture will give me the confidence, you know, because I represent a lot of people. But man, I'm here to work. So and you're going to disrespect me here? I don't care.
You got to stand up for yourself. So those days are only semi-professional, right? I was working like at a tile shop from 9 to 5. Then we train.
Yeah.
So the crop now these days, you know, the double the figures, you know. I'm like $5,000. Like, I thought that was heaps of money compared to what we're getting back at Odoo.
Yeah.
You know, like just for winners, $50. It's like, oh, done. But with $5,000. So we had to work, you know, we had to pay rent. So they helped us with paying rent and stuff, but we had to feed. So there's two other males to feed, Santa and my brother.
Mm.
So yeah, we had to work. Santa had to work and do the grind, bro. And you know, it didn't come forefront until the Super League come in, you know.
Yep.
And sharks, man, money coming out their ears, bro. It's crazy. It's all ahead. Unbelievable.
Oh, that's right. Oh, it's not, well, you'd know too, eh, Dave, you're in that business, would I? It's when you've got something to trade it off against.
It's crazy, bro. Talk about that picking order and like Super League coming, you're the big dogs and you get the big money.
Yeah.
And then whatever's left is for the, you know. So, hey, it's better than what I had before, you know.
Yeah.
Oh, exactly. It helps you buy a house and buy a car, invest in other properties, you know, and it starts from there. So it was a whole learning curve for me, man, like, you know, buying a house, buying a car, investing in other properties so the money does go to waste, you know. Yeah. So, and Santa was really good with that. So, you know.
Her mom's always good at that, eh?
So, she's our boss lady.
Tell me about it.
Yeah, so, but they know the grind.
I just want to talk to you about, you know, there was that, just going back a bit around, you know, you were meant to go back to the Warriors, you know, and how that played out. Because, again, you know, obviously that's good for you. And when we just talked about you having two parties,
yep,
you know, bid for you. But knowing you'd been in Canberra now for 2 years and freezing, but obviously, that just, you know, but you had a star-studded team and then, you know, the Warriors were just kind of starting up.
Yeah.
You know, the reasoning behind you staying with the Raiders and, you know, what did you go through?
Yeah, no, there was, we just won the GF, you know, the Raiders against the Bulldogs there. So on a bit of a high, you know, Ian Robson, John Mooney, scouting for players. So they came over see, or they tried to sign me up and they offered a contract.
Yeah.
And it was more than my first contract with the Raiders, and I was like, oh, this is cool. So I didn't have agents back then, you know, play agents, football, you know, that looked after all that financial side of things. And, you know, I said, oh, this could be an opportunity to go home and see mum, go home, you know, settle down and try my luck with the Warriors. And, just young and naive, also, you know, no experience in the contract side of things and, you know, the fine print and whatnot. I was like, nah. So I met these guys at the airport, signed this paper. I said, oh, yeah, the key man. Yeah, I signed this deal for like 2 years. And, you know, they said it was a first grade contract, but it wasn't. It was just like, you know, reserve grade or whatever.
Yeah.
And the witness, this is the one that probably not many people know. The witness was a cleaning lady. She witnessed the contract. So the lady was coming past with her pick up all the cups and plates and, oh, excuse me, can you sign this? So the lady just signed it. So that was my witness. I don't know if that's legit or not, but, you know, so not a family member, but.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was weird. But, yeah, signed that. And then when I left the airport, and I just felt I did something wrong there, you know, it didn't feel right. So I rang Tim Sheens and told him what I did. And then he rang the CEO, you know, which was Kevin Neal back then. And we straight into the office and I told him, you know, told him what I did. And he said, well, we don't want to let you go. So they put up another contract. And I signed that contract, the Raiders contract, and, they were going to back me no matter what. They didn't want me to go. And I was like, so I rang, you know, Ian Robson. I said, oh, sorry, mate, I had a change of heart. I'm going to stay with the Raiders. And then, just went to court. court battle for like a few months, and the whole camera right behind me, and his mum came over, Frank Endicott. He was like my best witness, because he was with the Warriors reserve grade. So you know, I said, oh, you know, what's this guy's character? And you know, he spoke highly of like our boys back in the days, and he ended up being my best witness. Old Frankie, you know, he just calls a spade, and you can't force someone to go play where you don't want to, you know, you're not happy. Yeah. But I know it's the legal side of thing. Sorry, John Quayle came down, Ken Arthurson, sorry, the big dogs,
big wigs,
ARL,
yeah,
and Santa gave them a piece of their mind. I said, well, he doesn't want to go, he changed his mind, so just let him go, rip on him. And so I ended up being the first one to. Neglect on the old contract, re-nig. So, 3 months. Won the court case, and then on the Friday, it was a Friday, so and then Tim C said, well, you're on the bench. So we played the Broncos Friday night. And I said, oh, man, I was just been drinking wine and stuff. I said, yeah, I was happy. I said, yeah, no, sweetest, I'll be on the bench. So my legs were gone, bro. Came on, and the crowd were clapping, and it was just, the only way for me to repay them back was service, give my service as long as possible. And I just did what I could, you know, for that club. And 12 years later, it's like, I could have retired there, but things kind of, financially, I had to go another path, as you do, you know, for your family, and take another chapter in your book. And the Warriors ended up getting me later on anyway.
Yeah, well, that's all right. It all pans out, huh? It works out for everybody.
Yeah.
You know? Hey,
you know, it's just, I just delayed my path, you know?
Exactly. And who's to say that it wouldn't have been, you know, something different if you didn't go that path, eh? You know, the career that you would have had. So,
well, I feel I would have gone backwards if I came back. Just going back with my boys, back, you know, the habits and stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know. So I thought, you know, for me, personally, I thought, you know, staying in Canberra, learning off the OGs and learning my craft of the game, you know?
Yeah.
And it was the best decision for myself.
Well, it's worked out, and I think, yeah, it's just smarter, you know, learning from those that have done it before, and then, you know, at the top of their games, you know, where else would you want to be? And
you know,
or if you're going to somewhere to start something brand new, and you might not be learning from as many, you know, as the
absolutely.
You know, the same quality of players. I'm surely you wouldn't, because you know those guys that you've, you know, in that team were absolute legends. Are legends now. So
why not learn off the best stars?
That's what we always try and do, you know. But again, that team, and especially, you know, like you say, for 3 months for a young guy, and it's how tough it is, you know. What are you worth? Why do you think you're worth?
You know? So like, it's like, I think I'm more than 5 grand.
Prove it. Yeah.
But then, you know, the agent came in, and he was with me for a long time. Jim Bannigan was his name. And he, you know, he was the Lucifer of, you know, football managers. They just get in there and just go get whatever you for your player, and I didn't have to worry about anything else, and just worry about footy, you know. And probably the best move.
Yeah, it's like you say, I still have, you know, we've still got people that do look after us in certain.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, yes. Yeah. Definitely.
Yeah.
Because what we've done also, myself, like, you know, Sonny. Everyone is, you need someone to keep it real, and making sure the deals are legit and getting your time, you know, because, you know, man, I wouldn't say no to anybody, you know, it's like, to people, hey, sweet assholes, yeah, man, all good. But now it's like,
exactly. Yeah, you know, and I think you realise now. I'm exactly the same, and you know, I know that's probably the same with Santa. And you know, with Rochelle, my wife is.
Oh yeah.
Oh, why can't you just? Oh, but now you're going to go over there, and what about a? You know, it's the time now. You know,
it is time that you, precious time. Yeah, that we're trying to give back.
Yeah.
Yeah. trying to give back to our gurus because they've done the hard yards and while we're doing our yards to provide for our ahinga, you know? And it's kind of just the roles are kind of reversed.
Yeah, that's right. They're the priority now.
Yeah, so and it's the grind and focusing on my children, watching them play sport and just being the, you know, the parent up in the tree's hidden. Go, son.
Yeah.
Those guys, you know?
100%. Yeah, our kids don't listen to it. Well, mine don't listen to me anyway, so.
So they just put them on hold or so? Nah, I just, you know, the kids, they, you know, born in Australia, we made, Santa made, you know, swimming was the outlet for them at a young age to give them some resilience and some purpose. So they swam for like 10 years. And like once you get out of swimming, just that is that's crazy sport.
Yeah,
the discipline, you know, the resilience, and all the obstacles that come with it, they, you know, they can take on the world. So we steer them in the right direction there. And as soon as they turn to teenagers, finish swimming. But anything they, you know, anything they join, they kind of excel on their own, you know, without being the, you know, the tag always sticks around being the father, you know, the son or the daughter of, you know, Rubel Wiki. And, you know, I've got to tell them, I'm your dad, that's it. And I can't help with the tag that comes with it, but I am your dad first and foremost, you know. So it's tough, so tough. And we try to tell them to be their own person. If they, you know, if the people get out of line, just tell them, say, man, this is my dad, leave him alone. We're having dinner. You know, those ones.
So you played with so many greats of the game. Which one, you know, kind of for you was the one that stood out for you the most?
Well, we spoke about Mal also. That was that was my dream to go there to play with Mal and learn from him. I can tell you personally, honestly, we've become really, really good friends even to this day. You know, we've still got like a good chat group with the boys. And I'm always, you know, checking up on Ricky, Laurie, Clyde, and all the boys, and just to, you know, always say Merry Christmas and so forth. And it's when you win a grand final, it is special. And to do it with a bunch of legends like the team we had. Yeah, the connection is, it can't explain it, mate, but it's, yeah, we're still connected to this day. And even Brett Mellons is one of my, the tightest ones, mate. You know?
Yeah.
But honestly, out of all the players throughout my career, like in Canberra or wherever, Kunupongi is the one that sticks out for me.
Mm.
You know, the way he went about his business for his team, and his no-nonsense approach to games. You know, him and Johnny, like my big brothers there, and they told me this is how we do it. This is how we're going to, like, plant our seed in the club by following their lead. And I used to hold the pad for those two, like, prior games. So, yeah, I was half concussed by the time I went on anyway. So I said, the pads here. What are you going to do? Both of them.
I remember Johnny. I played with Johnny.
Oh, Hachi, you know, that's what I mean. Also, like, why not?
That loose arm, that's where you got your tackle technique from, huh?
So, and that's where Johnny got his big calves, because he was on his tiptoes. And like T-Bone and, you know, Dave, Lomax, all those boys. Because all four boys came over at one stage. Just training with those boys and like prepping with them prior games just got me in the right set of mind, and but in the warm-ups, man, I was like clarity in my nose and stitches in my eyes. This is from just holding the pads
just for the warm-up.
These two. Oh yeah, solid. It's like, so I was, yeah, going the game, so I was already ready. And but you know, Kunin's got that that voice, that croak in his voice, and he's always, you know, growling. And so, man, this guy's in for the, you know, can see it in the white of his eyes that he was here for business every time, like training, playing. And yeah, I just really took so much from those two, but Kuna was the one that stood out for me, man, like through the Raiders and the Kiwis, you know, sadly taken away from us early. But yeah, he was my stalwart for me also, like through my career. And, you know, I wanted to make sure that we, that I trained like Quinnen trained and played like Quinnen used to do, you know, and left it all on the field without any regrets.
Oh, yeah, no, sadly, sad loss from such a big man to, you know.
Yeah, it was crazy.
Now, I always wondered, how hard is the transition from the centres to the front row?
I don't know what I was thinking, but then they had a shortage of front rowers. This was on the mid-90s, I think, when Mel was coach and the front rowers getting injured. And it was unlimited interchange back then. And they said, oh, who wants to play front row, you know? I said, pull my hand up and have a whack at it, you know. And it saved me like chasing Ricky Stewart's kicks down there. And what else? So he's just coming tighter, just did the hit-ups, had a little breather. But my first game was against Parramatta, like against McCracken and Jim Dimmock and Dean Payne and all those boys. And come on, Solid Man, I got fungered, man. I got boom. I said, welcome to the middle, you little shit, you know, Dean Payne and all those boys, hey. But I was on there for 10 minutes, did my job, you know, had a little bit of footwork so I could just sneak in between the front rowers, the forwards there, and try to get quick play of the balls. But I really enjoyed it. It was tough, the transition. But I just kind of really enjoyed the physicality of it. Mm. Getting in there with, you know, the guys left and right of you, you know, and it was the same in the backs, but totally when you're in the middle, it's, you can't hide. So if you miss a tackle or you don't tie in, you're going to get found out. So the accountability kind of picked up even more being in the middle. Mm. And so, come on, starts on the wing and ends up in front row. And, like, who does that transition, man? Yeah. But, you know, it was like there was a lot of the – in the 90s, all those centres back then were huge. You know, Mel was 130-kilo centre that could move. You know, you had Graham Bradley for St. George.
Jared McCracken as well. He did
Jared McCracken, Mark McGaw, Adrian Edenhausen, Paul McGregor. Yeah. All big centres, man. But, yeah, none of them transitioned, right? Like this fella. But, yeah, I really enjoyed the challenge. And I think the responsibility and accountability was the one for me. And that's why I kind of fell in love with being in the middle and the back row side of things. And because you had to lay the platform for your team. Mm. Just like in any, like when in rugby, you know, forward's not going forward. Man, you can't go anywhere. So, yeah, transition was a tough one. But, yeah, a wake-up call big time.
Oh, I can imagine. Is that when – Sally, when did the carver start to come in for your recovery? Was it the forward days?
Yeah, he also, like, I think it was it was about 28. So I was just getting on a bit, and I was like, ooh, getting a bit sore, Sally. I was like – So I dabbled in the carver earlier in 94 with Noah. So when we So when we won the grand final, the second day we went to a pub and this big limousine turned up and just had like a tanoa and carver. So it was from the Fijian embassy in ACT. And it turned up at our pub. It came in. Big guy came in, put the bowl down, mixed the carver for us. You know, Noah mixed the carver for us. And I was like, ooh. No, you know, I was had heaps of beer with me already by then, but in the car, I was, oh man, it started sobering me up a bit. So I started feeling the numbness of my body. It was like, but then, like, still dabbled in the car after I got on later on. But 28, I started taking more serious and did some research on it, on the car and the positives for recovery, some for your aches and anti-inflammatory, the hydration purpose of it. So, you know, I was only dabbling after games on a Sunday. So, and it worked wonders, man. It was like, so good. And so I never drank during the seasons. I only drank cover. And then, you know, you always have your Mad Monday and you have a few drinks. But the cover was my saving grace. And I do believe the cover kind of extended my career that extra 7 years after that. Any injuries, silly, always on my injuries. And cover was never too far away, you know, just to help me get back on the field. So I was a bit of a perfectionist when it comes to injuries, man. I would just get onto it, ice it, the cover, ice, just do the, you know, do what was right so to make sure I get back on the field. So any time I'd had missed many games was through suspensions or a couple of broken arms, but that was it. Kind of looked after my injuries, didn't have any knee injuries or shoulders, but yeah, I was real strong on those. A big advocate of like looking after yourself with injury, what sort of things are.
Well, it's a testimony to your longevity, you know. Obviously, the carver plays a part, and I'm a bit like that now. And, you know, I can't take it in terms of the, you know, with as the drink. It takes too long. I need it straight away. So, you know.
Yeah. Well, they got bottle stuff now, so.
Yeah.
They got bottle stuff down in Auckland.
But, you know, that understanding that our bodies are our tools of our trade, so you've got to look after it, and you've got to, you know, educate yourself about how you do that, you know. Yeah. And I know this is, you know, you've made a career out of it now. But yeah, that's so important, I think, for all our, you know, young players and understanding what works for you, you know, and how can you keep yourself out there. And even more so now with concussion and, you know, look, understand the symptoms, understand the risks, and, you know, what we do. Because, it's a big player in at the moment. We all know from the earth, goodness grows. Victual, New Zealand's own health and wellbeing supplement range with native and Pacific ingredients. Visit victual.co.nz and take your first step to help your goodness grow.
So when did you retire, Sally?
I retired and I came back. So, you know, I finished in 2011. Same as you. So I was very much looked after injuries. So I was, you know, had a good run in terms of looked after the body, made, you know, the stretching and things like that. You know, you understand, you know, with what works and you know, like yourself, research. Someone's doing this. I'm going to have a look at that. What does that do?
Yeah.
But you soon get into it, you know, like, you know, with what we're doing now in terms of supplementing, you know, trainings, because, you know, you've got to replace what you're using because you're not working out like normal people are.
Absolutely. Working,
and the intensity that you have to work out. So you've got to make sure that you're putting something back in the body and looking after it so it can go not just play the game but also train for the game the next day.
Absolutely.
That sometimes that was the hardest, man. I'll play for free, but it's these trainings.
So when they call you up for masters, they say, oh, mate, I still got to do my 20-minute stretch, but, you know, 20-minute warm-up. You know, I'll still play masters also, like 40. Also, like last year in July the 4th, I'll never forget. You know, silly, that one is just daunting. I played, you know, Test 40, played like in all different countries, met the Queen. So like, I played like Masters against Manurewa and like, I stabbed my Achilles and I was like, oh, man. So just honestly, my name was Mud for a long time due to snapping my Achilles playing Masters, and I was like, far out. I was a bit depressed actually because, you know, because of the injury, it was so daunting and never thought this would happen to me because my fast twitch muscles are not that fast. You know? Yeah. Sorry, but I just feel I didn't do my warm-up that I usually do. It was cut half in half because I was running late.
Yeah.
And Francis Leodos also would be, you know, two tries behind us. Oh, yeah, far out. Give me the ball. Give me the ball then. And that's, it was 80 meters tries that I had to, like, get for the team, you know. And I was like, man. And I felt it after my second try, and it's like, oh, this is a bit tight. Mm. The task is a bit tight, you know. But they didn't sub me off.
Yeah.
I said, oh, no, Ruben, you stay on. Your black shorts. Because there were heaps of red and gold shorts.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah, sweet. Then we had a scrum move. This guy thought he was Reese Walsh, but it was the wrong RW. So I was like, oh, mate, I thought I was fullback. And I did the big arc, stepped the winger, kept running, and I thought he caught me. Just heard it. It's like, boom, it was like a shotgun. I was like, oh, he ankle tapped me. And then as I was going down, I tore my left hammy. So I tore my left hammy and did my right Achilles. I said, oh, mate. I got up, and I said, what happened? I said, I couldn't feel my leg. It was like, well, that's weird. So, yeah, they tried to carry me off. And they carry me off. This is Masters. I was a rip-off. So,
Two legs.
Was one. The left hammy's torn. And then the other one snapped the Achilles. I said, guess.
Oh.
So, that was the process getting back for that. So I managed to get back in 7 months. It's a 12-month recovery, but I managed to get back in 7 to do a CrossFit comp, tick that box, and, you know, still building the calf up. I'm still about four months away, but I'm able to run and jump and everything like that. So, you know, the rehab came in straight away. I was on it every day, man.
Awesome.
Used the upper body weights for a long time.
Oh, no, you can't tell us.
Oh, no, I've just got that widescreen panorama.
Oh, bro, look, I know your pain. That was the injury that finished me.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, you've had it?
Yeah, yeah, I did my left one. Same thing. I've kind of, you know, I had a tight calf when I was playing for the Chiefs. That was it that finished me, you know. And I'd always, you know, as you do it, you kind of have Achilles injuries.
Yeah,
as you,
yeah,
it's just
yeah,
a
just
long.
A load, eh?
Yeah, it's just a loading thing. So, and then we were playing here at Eden Park, Chiefs versus the Blues. And then I came off at halftime and I said to the coach, I think my calf's tightening up and it's a bit of pain. And we'll monitor you. Just go back out there. We'll monitor you. And then, same thing. I didn't have to be. I just took the ball up, and got tackled, and I just went to the ground. And then when I went to get up, my ankle, you know, was floppy. You know, I was something's wrong with this.
Yeah.
And then you know they came on and they checked it, and I could see in his face he knew straight away, the doctor knew straight away what it was, and he didn't want to tell me. I said, you just better come off. And then he got me to the side, and then he did the same test, and he says, yeah, Tana, you've ruptured your Achilles. and you know, you knew I'd already, you know, you'd already heard the guys that had it. Oh, that's 12 months, 9, you know. That's me done, man. Yeah, that's my body telling me that's time to hang up the boots.
Did you have the op also?
I had the op. That was in 2011. I did that, and so I had the op, but I didn't do the rehab. So, you know, that's why I've got one skinny calf and one bigger calf. I always tell people, look at my calves. This is what happens if you don't do the rehab.
You got that gangster lean for real.
But, at that stage, I started doing it, eh? And then I thought, I'm not coming back to play. So, you know, I'm just going to rest now. I'll just the body
to rest. I was like just due to the start of my career to like when I finished, I got to keep on doing the rehab, the recovery, just to, you know, just to get back and doing some kind of exercise, you know, for me. Yeah. And if I'm not doing any exercise, well, I'm losing my, you know, losing my cool. First 3 months was tough because I couldn't use my leg, upper body stuff, and then the cast came off and I got a moon boot, so I started doing some burpees. So now, you know, just keep my mind fresh and that well-being side of things for me.
100%.
So I can focus, like, so I can put that energy to the members and help around the house when I couldn't for like ages.
But again, it goes to show the habits are, you know, you develop over time.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, you'd finish playing, but the habit of looking after yourself, that mindset of, oh, look, I've got to look after the body. Because again, the same thing, you know, I've still got to walk around. You know, and again, you know, what you do for your business, you still want to be able to participate, and, you know, what you do for leisure too, you know. I still want to be able to be active.
Yeah, absolutely. Because, you know, it's the bread and butter. You know, it's not those big contracts that we get no more. So we have to grind. And, like, for me to get injured, I'm letting my wife down, myself down, and my work. Like, we, you know, invested in a gym. It's 3 years now, and I love that gym. You know, I want to keep it afloat, and, you know, all the constraints that came with it through COVID, we fought for those, and it's still standing. We lots of subsidies, you know, came into play to help pay the bills, and our landlord was really, you know, really, really awesome. He helped us out, and you know, gave us a few months to get, you know, free rent, and then we paid it back later on. But it was a tough one when you got your own business also, and, you know, we had to dig deep. And so I'm working part time at with my mate 3 days a week in a warehouse, just old school, go back to stacking pallets, you know. And, you know, blessed to get that opportunity to go and work there and help pay the bills, and then go to the gym. And this is what you got to do, you know.
100%. No, you got to do what you got to do. And I suppose, you know, transitioning that too, you know, like when you were coming through, like you say, we all have, when we're in it, you know, when did you start thinking about life after? What am I going to do next? You know, you talked about, you know, investing and properties and things like that.
And education. So, you know, through the years with all this money, with the contract stuff, we did invest really well with properties. So we had a property that was like, when we were in Canberra, we still have one now, which is in Queen Street. So we sold one, and we still got one that's still active. So it's still bringing some little bit of income, and that's like 20 plus years on that this property is still going. You know, we've had a few properties in Canberra, and making sure we get some good financial advice in regards to the money side of things, and it's paid off. You know, it's helped us get this beautiful house we have now. You know, we always had the mortgage, you know, the in-laws live with us. I think probably 2006 when I retired, Kiwis also kind of, you know, I had to start looking at plan B. And I think, you know, when I retired from the Kiwis, there was the time to, you know, pick up my skill factor. Education wise, you know, I left school when I was 15, so it's time to go back to school. So I invested in some courses, strength and conditioning, because I kind of like that avenue there. So and that kind of tied into, after I finished footy, I've been a trainer for the Warriors. So the transition from retiring in 2008 with the Warriors, it was an easy transition because I had some papers under my belt, you know. So that definitely helped in, like, for future players or NRL players, rugby players, whatever, make sure you've got a plan B, because it'll sneak up and just bite you when you least expect it. You know, the average age in the NRL player is only 2 years, you know. So I'm not sure what the average age, like, average playing career in rugby is, but
I think it's
2 years. Two years in rugby league. So, you know, be blessed to play this long. So we had to make sure we had a plan B. And we love the group training side of things, and Santa and I dabbled on that just with a few friends, and it kind of escalated from there. And, you know, the learning process just kept continuing, you know. And I went back to school this year with my daughter, did a diploma in, like, sports rec. So I was in the same class as my daughter, man. So
really?
Crack on. Hold hands, get there, and then Nick Munna, shoom, bolted. Hang out with her mates. I'm at the back with my glasses, oldest in the class, older than the tutors. Santa was doing the degree. So we're all at school, and we managed to tick that box, my daughter and
I. Oh, that's awesome. Oh,
yes, it was so good, you know, and education is really important, and a thing to do with my daughter. It was a special moment, and, you know, it was Santa that pushed us to that because she was doing a degree, you know. So she did a diploma, now she's doing a degree, but that was put on hold due to her mum. So she's got a few more papers to do, but hopefully we cross the stage in May, so let's tick that box, you know. Yes. So, and I took some of my coaches back with me too, at the gym, because just to upskill them, and it was really cool, you know, because we were more mature, and, you know, being there, done that, and like these kids were turning up, they're like half an hour late. So, sir, shut the door, they're late, make them do burpees outside. So we tried it for one class.
Yeah,
you come late, you have to do burpees outside. I said yes. So they were like, yeah, because, you know, they're taking their time to teach you, and you're going to be half an hour late, and then you get on your phone and look at YouTube or TikTok and stuff. I was getting eco. Where else?
I can imagine.
I said, mate, turn the phone off and take some notes. And then when we get to doing our assignments, they, you know, texting, oh, Sully, what was the last class? I said, I'm not telling you, man. I got my own battles. Yeah, Sully, oh, geez, like, got to do bloody assignments. It's been a long time since, you know, between breaks with that one.
Oh, respect, man. I got most respect for you going back to class and to school, you know, and yeah, that's that. You're teaching those lessons again, like you know, time management, you know, just like you know. And I'm sure, like, yeah, we did skip over too, I suppose, you know, the time at the Warriors, you know, when you came here, you were the elder statesman there too. Yeah. And I'm sure, you know, the club's been through its trials and tribulations, and you know, and but I'm sure that would have been a big learning curve for you too, because again. You know, when you talk about leadership, you know, I know that was chucked upon you as well. So how was that? How do you see leadership in your time at the Warriors?
Yeah, so when they did kind of eventuate signing to go to the Warriors, it was a tough decision, and because I had Wigan knocking on the door at the same time. So I had the two Warriors coming for me, and it was like, which one's going to be the best opportunity for the future of the children. And you know, the kids wanted to travel, you know. They wanted to go see the Eiffel Tower and stuff like that, Disneyland. I said, well, and then I had to look at the bigger picture when they end up growing up, you know, they're only like 6 and 4. So when they came over back to New Zealand, they could grow up with their cousins and learn that other side of the culture that they missed out on, you know. And but the transition, being the elder statesman going back to the Warriors, you know, Steve Price went, you know, signed up as well, Nathan Fien. So we had two different types of leadership, Pricey and myself. He was more eagle, I'm more a dove eagle, you know, if you put in the language terms of the birds. But yeah, I think it was my duty to make sure that the Polynesian boys knew how to take positive criticism. Because you had a few Aussies in the team, like Nathan Fien, Todd Byrne, Steve Price, Michael Luck, Michael Witt, you know, Grant Rivelli. So these guys have grown up in the Australian system, and the only way they know is to win. And to win, you have to ask for your best, even if it's going to hurt you, you know?
Yeah.
So it was kind of took me back to where I started also, and I was going, oh, yeah. And these boys wanted to, like, punch the captain out and stuff. You know, I said, hey, don't take it personal. Just take what you need and then use that and put that into the game. So I had to control all the hollies, Hame Lawake, Ratumo Vave, you know, all the boys, you know.
Yeah.
Oh, mate. So, it was a battle, but started getting a bit of a following with the Polynesian boys. You know, money was just starting off. All these young Polynesian boys in the middle. And it pay dividends, you know, just passing my knowledge on and making sure they steered in the right direction, getting their balance right, you know, talking about plan B. And it was a successful move for myself. It took a couple of years to get that connection with the boys, and I think come 2008 we had a good little thing going on, you know, and everyone started going in the same direction. It's a hard one to get that magic, you know.
Yeah,
I don't know if you've been in teams, but everything just clicks. So with Canberra, it clicked, you know, in 94. We lost one game or two games that whole year, but everyone knew their job, you know. Everyone knew what they had to do. So just trying to get that on a regular basis at the Warriors was a hard task, you know, because they're back home with their mates, away from the footy field and from training. So, you know, habits come in. And it's trying to teach them to choose their own path and, you know, sometimes say no and think, oh, well, maybe just sacrifice for the team and see what's see what you want to get out of the game, you know.
Yeah.
But it took a while also because, you know, they're only young, so they had to mature. 3 years it took to kind of register for the boys and to take on the knowledge that we're trying to pass on.
And it's hard too, you know, like also as our, you know, I don't know, this is what I've come across. You can give the advice.
Yeah.
It's whether, you know, as you said, it's whether they take it on. And it's,
absolutely.
You know, it's not until they actually make the mistakes that you warn them about.
Yeah.
That they realize, I see what you mean now.
Yeah. But exactly.
But they have to go through it. Like they want to go through it.
And like, I think when they hit that, the wall, you know, a lot of them went through depression. A lot of us have moments we go through depression. So how do you get out of that? You have to speak out. You have to ask for help. It's the only way. If you keep burying it, it's just going to compile on each other and make it worse, and then negative thoughts come into your head and you do something silly, you know?
Yes.
Yeah. So
and, and you know, you're right. It's hard in the city we're in to, you know, the amount of, you know, for the Warriors, the pressures from the external pressure that they live
absolutely
with.
Absolutely. You know, the fans, you know, the from the club, because they want to win to make them succeed. So there's a lot of pressures, and you know, like rugby league, any sport, it's a business. And like when you're playing at that top tier, man, you have to perform, or else, you know, they'll just bring someone else in, another employer. So that's, you know, we talk about loyalty. Loyalty is, it's there, for, you know, for your mates and stuff, but they're a business, you know. They need to get results.
Yeah.
And you're just an employer just packing those shelves also, you know. So you're bringing the people in, bringing the people into the crowd. So that's stacking the shelves I want to talk about. And you have to do it to the best of your ability. So, and as I said, you wish you could play forever, but you can't. So, and to try and just pass on the knowledge of always have a plan B, always have a plan B, be outspoken. Don't die and don't die with it. Stuck inside you internally, you know, it's just, poof, makes it worse.
Oh, exactly. And, you know, you talk about that mental well-being. How have you been able to cope with that, you know, as you see, because you're right. And that's, again, being male and Pacific Island Māori, you know, those two things.
It's a no-no.
It doesn't help.
It's a no-no. Yeah, it's a no-no. But, you know, I have a close-knit circle. You know, my best mate is Logan Swan. You know, Wax, what's the sore? You know, we've got a nice little chat group, and we're always checking in on each other. I have my Silverbacks, which is the old OGs from Otara, that always play every Sunday and catch up and play, or they try and play touch and tackle and stuff like that, and they end up mocking each other for like 3 hours after. So, you know, having those groups help. I have Wiki Works men's group. So all our members, our members at the gym, all our men, we're on a messenger. So anyone's going through any tough time, we try to catch up. once a month, kind of like Indian or conversation, and just talk about random stuff, man, and getting it off your chest. And it gets emotional, man. It's like people going through losing jobs, marriage, suicidal, asking for help, you know, because they've got no work. So, and we, you know, with that chat group, everyone is helping each other, and that keeps me happy, you know, and keeps me grounded, and that we got those groups, because you need those groups, you know. And I got my Raiders groups and the boys, I got my Canberra boys, and we always check up on each other. But I think it's the most important step for these warriors at the moment is more being more outspoken, you know, and asking for help, you know, and some advice, especially from like some OGs that have been there, done that, you know, whether on your rugby circles or the league circle, whatever circle, just give them some tips to pass on, you know.
Yeah. Oh, no, hey, look, again, that's awesome in terms of, you know, giving them those platforms and opportunities. Yeah. They're looking for having like-minded people out there. You say, it's funny, you know, as we do with our barbars, you know, it starts off as a sports team. And we all
play touch. So it was
fun, and you know, boys getting together, and then it's become a group, a support
catch up.
It's a support catch up now. You know, make sure looking in on each other, yeah, because it's real, you know, our
you need especially
our generation. You know, we're losing too many good men too early. So it's just understanding that, you know, you give them somewhere where they can have that opportunity to,
absolutely,
to speak out. And it's tough. Look, I find myself, you know, not wanting to burden other people with my issue, my problems. And, you know, it's just not used to asking for things. I'm just, I work it out. I'll figure it out.
You know? But it just compels, you know. You know, it adds up. And, and like, if I... And for Santa, she's taught me how to open up a lot more, you know. And I was that guy, you know, grown up, you know, mum, three kids, no father figure. And, you know, the battle she went through to and, you know, witness that stuff, that's something you would not, like, wish on anybody, you know. And it's like I bottled that stuff up for a long time, and then I became white ribbon ambassador to speak out about that stuff. And that was the toughest conversation I had to have with my mum, to say, I want to tell your story, mum, and how you survived that, and what I saw, and what kind of maybe want to, you know, kill these guys, you know. But I had to find another vice to control my aggression. And she took me to rugby league, man, and that's every time I'm on the field, I'm representing my mum and her struggles and my siblings and what they went through. And, like, for Santa, you know, we talk about our wives, bro. She's, you know, they've been the rock. And they will tell you straight, you know, and she ran it straight at me and told me, you got to open up and get it out. So White Ribbon Ambassador was the one to speak out and tell my story all around the country too. And it was pretty surreal, you know, but it helped take that load off us big time, and then I could move on and help others. But man, that was tough.
Oh no, geez, again, it's awesome, and like, again, you know, leading in that space helps others follow, you know, because of the respect you have for, and hold, you know, amongst all people. From what you achieved, you know, and that persona, you know, always everyone expects that persona, and sometimes you know, you get caught up in that. Oh, he's a hard man.
That's what I mean. It was just, exactly. Don't want that tag, but it's like they put you on they put us up there as like superheroes, and just you know, the stats to make us, I don't know what it is, but it's just a stat for me, and you'll be the same too. But deep down, I'm just that South Auckland boy, just, you know, on the grind, and just trying to do what I can for my family and for my mates, and just making sure they're, you know, they have a good life.
Yeah, And you just want to, we want to be around for our kids, huh? We want
to see So, reckon, bro. I'm sure there's grandchildren on the way somewhere, but I'm not, I don't want it yet. Not really. Because I'm still.
As long as it's just us thinking about the, don't worry, mate.
No worries on this side. It's all safe.
Salif, that's awesome stuff. Also, and I've just got a, probably a couple more just around your business. And so, you know, how was it? Like, we talked a little bit about that with COVID. I know that must be have added to, you know, that that mental angst, you know, and dealing with that. And, you know, how are some of the skills that you've learned, you know, through your footy, you know, that you've brought into your business life now? And obviously, you know, you've talked about how you handle that mental side of it. Must be tough. And again, you know, we do what we have to do. We don't. Our kids can't eat pride, so it's no use saying, "Oh no, I don't do that kind of job."
Yeah, exactly.
You know, again, you've proven it. So now I need to go work if that means to go pick up rubbish or whatever. That's what I'll do.
But that's and I think when our business was hit by the COVID. So we adapted, you know, we learned to adapt with the mandates and the MOH rules. So when we did close, we ended up giving our people some equipment. And then we ended up going Zoom.
Yeah.
So Zoom in the morning, Zoom in the evenings, and making sure their well-being space, like through exercise, was looked after. So we had morning classes and the evening classes, and all our coaches jumped on board the Zoom and just kept it alive, you know. And when the mandates changed, we decided to do the training outside the gym because we couldn't train inside the gym. So I bought some mats. We put the mats outside so they can still do the workouts, bring the equipment out. And we were like in the back of the gym. In the car park area, just doing the workouts. So yeah, we just had to adapt, and then the vaccination passes come in. You had to be vaxxed, so we had a few anti-vax, so they couldn't come back to the gym. And we said, "No, we're sorry, we're sticking by the mandate because it's part of New Zealand Exercise's curriculum, and for us to function." So we had to put the mandates and, oh man, the QR codes and the mask. But yeah, everyone bought into it. You know, we only probably lost about 5 or 10 members. But you know, we wish them, hopefully they'll come back to us, and they probably will in the next couple of weeks. But we had to stay strong and protect our gym and make sure that COVID didn't come in. But we set the rules up on our page, set the rules up on our influx to make sure they stick to the guidelines. So any symptoms, stay away from the gym. Just think of the others. You know, we were pretty OCD in the gym, so sanitizing everything, mopping up, sweeping up, mopping up, making sure everything's wiped down, make sure you know treat this gym like your house. So it's one thing that Sandra's passed on to me is the OCD. You know, oh, sorry, you can eat off our floor. There's a short so fly, the floor is so shiny, man. It's crazy. You go like that. I was like, oh, passed. But yeah, we adapted the situation, the different times of the COVIDs, to make sure our business stays alive. We took a hit. We took a hit big time with the money coming through.
Yep.
So we had to ask for help with subsidy and so forth. And you know, when I talked about going back to work, also, you know, it was, you know, trouble times, you know, and had to go back and ask for help from a mate that I went to school with, who's one of the members, and, you know, met with a boss and gave me 3 days a week. And Santa was doing the other 2 days, you know, so we were sharing the role and just bringing some extra income in to help pay the bills. And, you know, we come from that cloth that's, you know, you got to do the hard work. Doesn't worry us, you know. I don't care what it is, man. I'll, you know, be stacking shelves, go pack and save, whatever helps to pay the bills, you know. And, yeah, because all the other money's invested in other stuff, so we can't go and rely on that stuff. We have to do the grind, you know, get our hands dirty, do what we need to do and making sure the rent's paid, the mortgage, yeah, everything. So yeah, just ticking all those boxes and finding a way to marry all that together to make sure everything's ticked off. And some weeks are really bad, also it's real bad. And then some days are really good. So just when you think it's getting really shit, we get a blessing from somewhere. Mm-hmm. And it's just, you know, like I'm doing the rugby team, I'm doing Warriors Foundation stuff, just trying to bring some more avenue in, you know, without breaking my back. But and still trying to, you know, pay it forward through like the foundation and being the spokesman, going to schools and teaching the kids about what it takes to be a professional athlete. And it all connects to the well-being side of things too, which is a big one for me. Yeah. And, you know, so just got to dabble in everything. Also, just pay those bills, bro.
And what does the future hold for you? What does the future look like, you know, for you, you know, if you look down the track?
Yeah.
So you're in the middle of the grind, you know, like, again, you know, I've been getting into businesses, you know, you've probably heard, you know.
Yeah, working, supplements.
At the moment, you know, you're working in it all the time. But we really want to be is just, you know, you want to work on it. So, you know, you've got, it's running itself and, you know, it's doing, you know, is that where you want to be? But it's going to take a while.
I think it's going to take a while. We're 3 years into it. I think we've probably got a few more in us, and then I think we'll probably look at something else. Mm. It takes a lot out running a gym.
Yeah,
Our gym's not like your normal gym. You know, we're more than a gym. The well-being space is a huge advocate for us. You know, we make sure, you know, other outside groups that want to come in, you know, we tell them the story about us and how this was created and what we try and achieve in here. You know, one of our mantras is no one gets left behind, and you won't get this stuff at F45, bro. It's like, this is genuine our gym. Wiki Works Fitness is this our gym, and it's our rules, and this is our ethos, you know, and everyone feeds off that. And it's more than just a gym, and it's a family, and they can trust us, not just being the trainer, but they can trust and confide in us, you know. So that's going beyond what a normal gym would do, you know. It's not just about
pain, not just physical health.
It's that the mental side too, and the
holistic,
and the emotions, and where our gym's average age is around 35, so it's an older gym. And you know, there's no mirrors, there's no shirts off. It's a no-no in our gym. You take your shirt off, get out. Get out of here, man. You're the wrong gym, man. No, but they're very, very mature audience, and they love it, and they need it. They need it for their well-being space, you know, and just the workout, and they know that the coaches are on the same level, you know. It's so important.
Yeah, and it's a, you know, it's a well needed service in terms of that you know, that industry and that space in the right now.
Yeah, also absolutely. So and where we're situated, also we're right in the heart of Otara, Beards Road. It's very busy. There's helicopters. There's gangs. There's bikes. Mate, there's everything, man. There's guys graffitiing on all the walls. But not our wall. Our wall's untouched. It's like from Beach Street, Ramon, you know, the white trees. That's what our back of the wall looks like. So that's a respect factor, you know. They know the OGs come back to Otara to give back.
Yeah, and exactly. Yeah, they know that you're giving back, you're doing a service to the people, for the people.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. You know, government funding's come into the picture with youth programs. So we have youth programs that we have started at the gym for year 9 to year 13 kids for after school. Awesome. So that's been funded from the government, and that's like 7 blocks throughout the year, and they love it. You know, they love it. They come in. I take on Mondays. My daughter takes Wednesdays, and it's a good mixture. Yeah. And, you know, we're trying to teach them standards and, you know, time management, being on time, make sure you bring a drink, make sure you bring a towel, make sure you bring a mask. Mm. And, you know, there's consequences if you don't. Well, there's consequences
that's
also.
That's life, huh?
Yeah. They'll learn a, like a little something they picked up from WikiWorks is, you know, there's standards. Mm. And they can pass that on throughout their journeys and whatever journey they take, you know, whether it be sports or business or whatever. But turning up on time is the number one priority.
Mm. Oh, that's awesome, you know. And I think, you know, at that age too, you know, that young age, creating those habits. Again, yeah. There we go back, you know, what you've done, you're just passing those on, creating those habits for others, because, you know, it'll lead them in good stead as they move forward in life. Huh?
It's not rocket science stuff also, you know, it's just your values you've instilled from your parents and just adding on to that, you know, and, yeah, like, put us on that pedestal, but I don't like it. I'm just me, man, so... They can have any, you know, can chat to like anyone on the streets and just chew the fan. They just want to just want some time, you know.
Yeah. So, hey, I'm just looking at taking so much of your time and
all good. Also, it's been a good time, good catch up.
100% and just again, I've said it before, but utmost respect for what you're doing for our people and you know, and especially in the areas that you work in. You know, and leading from the front, you know, you don't talk about it, you be about it, you know, you know, it's tough times for everyone and you don't rely on, you know, other things. You just get out there, well, if I have to work, I work. If I, you know, I'm here to help. And that speaking out too, I know.
Yeah.
You know, we can all be better in that space.
No way for a few emails,
100%, that's it, exactly. Okay, also, hey, appreciate it. I appreciate your time as always. Alofakua to you and the family.
Yes, thank you also.
Thanks for listening. Make sure to check out Victual's website at www.victual.co.nz so you can rebalance your lifestyle with ancient wisdom and ingredients.